We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Hi there, hockey fans, and welcome back to RotoWire's signature NHL Hockey Pod podcast with Statsman and AJ. Friends, I'm Paul Bruno in Toronto, Ontario, and you can follow me at Statsman22. My co-host is AJ Scholes, who's a great follow at AJScholes24, based in Sun Prairie, Wisconsin, near RotoWire headquarters over in Madison. I'm sad to say that there's snow in the forecast here locally, and I wonder if AJ's got the same forecast out there, but I'm thinking it'll be overnight and it'll be gone before I wake up in the morning. I hope that's the plan. But last night we saw a major achievement in the hockey world. Patrick Marleau is now the all-time leader in games played, overtaking the legendary Gordie Howe. I saw Gordie play when I was a kid, and I can tell you, it felt like there was an aura around this guy on the ice. He was that special. A big man for his era, skilled, could shoot right or left, which you don't see anymore, or maybe never before or after Gordie. I actually got to meet him a number of years ago at a Hall of Fame induction ceremony and actually got a drink with him there, too. What a class act he was. Nicknamed Mr. Hockey. Seeing his name bumped down in another category leaves me a bit sad because he was passed by Gretzky in the goals and assists, and now the games played goes to Patrick Marleau. But on the other hand, Patrick Marleau stopped by Toronto for a two-year stint right at the beginning of the careers for Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner, and they did a really neat tribute to him last night with a naked cameo by Joe Thornton. I don't know if you've seen this, AJ, but it was kind of funny. And anyway, Patrick Marleau, very honest player, and to suit up for as many games as he has is really something, particularly with the grind of all the traveling and the clusters of games, 3 and 4 nights, 4 and 5, and all that sort of thing. And he hasn't missed one for about the last 10 years, it seems, by my quick calculation, and still going strong. But I do think that we're seeing the end of the line for Patrick. But I don't think this is a cheap achievement, AJ, and I wonder what your sense is of it. I know he had an impact on the young Leafs here, so I'll be grateful for that, and I'm sure they are too. But what is your sense, never having seen Gordie Howe, just maybe hearing a bit about the legend and seeing that record go by the boards?
Yeah, I mean, for me, you know, Gordie Howe's last year in the NHL was 1980, so that was, you know, a full 7 years before I was even born. So any instance of his play has been, you know, old highlights, black and white video from time to time, you know. So obviously I don't know a ton other than, you know, just the historical aspect of it. you know, for me, Patrick Marleau is a player that I've seen for my, you know, my entire life, coming into the league in 97. So, for me to see him do that, it is definitely, an achievement, in its own right. And as you said, you know, the longevity there, hasn't missed a game since 2009, which is pretty impressive, all things considered. As you said, with travel and, you know, being on the West Coast for most of that, those guys have some of the hardest travel during normal NHL seasons. And so certainly it's a credit to him. And look, the other thing is, you know, I'm a soccer fan, and there's been a whole hullabaloo, I'm sure, that people have heard about with this Super League, and it's all just a money grab, you know, and sure, Patrick Marleau has been well compensated for his years in the league. You know, according to Cap Friendly, their estimated career earnings for Patrick Marleau is like $96 million. Like, he's not hurting for money, but you don't play in that many games without a passion for the game and everything else that goes into just being prepared to be on the ice, right? It's not just suiting up for the games. You know, there've been retired players across all the sports that said, well, if it was just, you know, dressing for games and playing for games, I could still do that. But it's the other stuff. It's the training regimen during the season, in the off season. So to power through all of that for as long as he had, you know, really says a lot about him as a person and where he's taken the game is really incredible. So it was fun to see. I don't watch a lot of Pacific Division games these days. They're all on later. I did take the time to throw that one on today and catch the start of that game, just because it was such a momentous moment in his career and in hockey in general.
And the guy even had pit stops in both of our favorite hockey cities, as you know. So you got to see him up close, just like I did a little bit. And he is totally a class act, and maybe a finer gentleman you can't find around the league. So good for him that he's in the record books for that great achievement. A tribute, a tip of the hat from both of us in this corner to Pat Marleau.
Yeah. All right, Paul, wouldn't be where he was if it weren't for those 8 games he played for the Penguins. That's for sure.
That put him over the top. That's right. All right. Well, now we're ready to roll into our usual activity, which is looking at the 31 teams. We took a departure from that last week in looking at the trade deadline deals, but we're back at it, looking at the 31 clubs and their most recent roster moves and the scoring achievements, who's hot and who's not. So I'll begin this week with a look at Anaheim. They still reside in the cellar in the Western Division, went 2-2 last week. Young Alexander Volkov chipping in with some offense, though, and that's a great find if he can continue this, AJ. 3 goals and 1 helper there. Max Comtois is a guy who's emerged this season, actually, as a decent scorer. In fact, he's the lone 10-plus goal-scoring winger that they have on the roster this season. So good to see some youngsters coming through with a little bit of offense, because this has been a starved organization for goal-scoring for a few years now. On the back end, Josh Manson carrying the mail amid an injury list that bogs down a couple of other options back there. He picked up 3 helpers, but there's other news in the infirmary. It always seems like there is, actually. Lindholm, his wrist injury is not improving. They were hoping that this defenseman would come back at some point, but now it looks like he's done for the year, and that means that the offensive load is going to be limited to the usual suspects on the back end. Cam Fowler is probably my go-to guy, but Jamie Drysdale is looking pretty good in his first turn around the league, and maybe there is some hope for the future there, even on the back end. And of course, the Purple Heart has to go to the goalie, John Gibson, who just continues to perform very admirably in the nets, but this is going to be another non-playoff year for him, and that's got to be very disappointing, AJ. On the other hand, one thing to look forward to is how they deal with their LTIR situation. Kessler and Lindholm's deals are still on the books for $12-plus million. I know Lindholm's probably going to come back next year, but the Kessler deal for $6-plus million, I wonder if they'll deal that to get some flexibility, at least in the owner's pockets. They probably don't like dropping the $6 million on a guy who doesn't even play. I mean, it's covered by insurance and all the rest of that, but still an obligation for the club, and I think they might like to shed it and clean up their books a little bit. So what do you think about that prospect going forward?
Yeah, it's certainly an option for them to do. And to your point, though, it really comes down to, you know, real dollars in that sense because of, you know, the LTIR relief. They're not a team that is, I don't think, even next year is really going to be pushing for playoff hockey. They have some up-and-comers, but all these guys need contracts, literally everybody. Volkov, who you mentioned, Comtois, Sam Steele, Max Jones, Isaac Lidstrom, they're all going to be RFAs this year. So they're going to need to shell out some significant cash across the board there, you know, to a number of guys. So it's certainly an option for them, I think, to consider offloading that. But at the end of the day, you know, it's LTIR relief. Do you really want to give up a prospect to have somebody else take on that contract for a year? I don't know. One team that has historically taken on a lot of those contracts is the Arizona Coyotes, who had a 1-2 week last week. The news for them is they've got Darcy Kemper back in action, and he's been the best of a bad situation. You look at their last, you know, their last couple of games, he's 1-1 with a .867 save percentage, and that's the highest save percentage of anybody on the team. The youngster, Ivan Protsarov, .842 in one appearance. Antti Raanta, the worst of the bunch at .773 in his lone appearance. So, you know, the problems continue to be on the back end. Having Raanta, or rather Kemper healthy, is what they're going to need to try and stave off St. Louis. But the Blues are only a point back with three games in hand. I mean, honestly, you could conceivably put San Jose in the mix for that spot as well. I know we've kind of dumped on their season for much of the year, and rightfully so, but they're just 4 points back of Arizona with one game in hand. So there's no real, like, room for slipping up for Arizona, and they're going to need some offensive contributions, and they haven't gotten much in that sense from the guys you would like to see. Goligoski, one goal and two assists. Michael Bunting with two goals is not exactly the guy you expect to be leading the way for you. You know, you want bigger numbers from Clayton Keller, Phil Kessel, Christian Fisher, Oliver Ekman-Larsson has two assists in their last four games. So they're going to need some offense to help bail those goalies out a little bit, I think.
Yeah, and you mentioned Goligoski. At least he has rediscovered his offensive game. We've talked about him chipping in regularly in the last 3 weeks now, and that's a great sign for them because partnered with Oliver Ekman-Larsson, that gives them two legit offensive weapons from the back end, and that's more than most teams can boast. So that's at least something that they got going for them. Phil Kessel's had a nice year, but I'm like you. I wanted to see more of a next step for Keller and Garland. They've kind of not gone as far as I think they could, and of course they still have Derek Brassard, who is one of the more enigmatic players in the league for me. The guy's got a lot of skill. He's like Jonathan Drouin in Montreal. You see the skill set that these guys have, but it just doesn't translate into consistent offense, and that's why you see him way down on the depth chart. A turnaround for him would be a turnaround for this team's fortunes, but at least they got something going on the back end, so building blocks is what you're looking for at this stage, and they do have a couple there. Up next, we look at the Boston Bruins. They've got a lot of building blocks that have been in place for a while, AJ, and they went 4-0 last week despite a troubling situation in net that got a little bit of stability. Of course, the usual suspects up front on the perfection line delivered the goods, but the second line is what I want to highlight. We knew that David Krejci was a very good puck distributor, but he chipped in with three goals and two assists last week. He's been buoyed by the fact that now he's got a real weapon on his wing in Taylor Hall. And Hall, in his four games played in Boston, looks very comfortable, AJ. He's got two goals and an assist. The goals already equal what he picked up in Buffalo year to date. So he's got 11 shots on goal, a decent shots on goal rate. I think it can go even higher. But I love the partnership that he's formed with Krejci, and that gives Bruins a very legitimate look on the second line that they've been craving all season long. The goaltending situation has been a revelation here with Jeremy Swayman coming to the fore, and he picked up four wins in his five starts so far, AJ, and spelling Tuukka Rask and Yaroslav Halak. Halak is in the COVID protocol, but at least they can say that Tuukka Rask got back in the fold last week and looked really good. He picked up wins in both starts, allowing a total of four goals against and turning aside 52 of 56 shots that he faced. another great addition that they made at the trade deadline. This is one that went under the radar for most, but I really liked it. And that's the pickup of Mike Riley, off to a really great start offensively. That's not his game in Ottawa this season. He was really a stalwart who ate up a lot of minutes, but he has helped a depleted defense by picking up a couple of assists and also registering a +2, as he has fit in like a glove on the back end of the Bruins' blue line.
Well, yeah, and they're finally going to get some good news on that blue line here in the coming days. It looks like Matt Krasilchik is, possible to return to tonight. Jaroslav Halak is traveling with the team, so that's certainly good news. And same with Kevin Miller. He's also traveling with the team. Jacob Zboril, he'll be back as well potentially tonight. So really, the two things, they kind of rode out the storm with the banged up blue line and goaltending situation. And to your point, Swayman was really key to that and definitely did himself some serious favors in terms of his NHL outlook with that stint there. The Buffalo Sabres went 2-1-1 for, a pretty good week for them. They're also dealing with netminder absences. So Dustin Tokarski played in four games for them, picked up two wins while giving up 9 goals. Sam Reinhart getting some production, 3 goals, 1 assist. Casey Mittelstadt really, finally, the last month or so, has showed up in a way that I think Buffalo fans have been expecting for a while here. That maybe those couple stints in the minors, did them some good. Dylan Cousins, 4 assists, certainly a good outing for them. Look, Buffalo has the last couple of games here, they've showed up in a way that has been a bit surprising compared to most of the season. They got the win at Washington 5-2. They beat the Penguins on Saturday in the second game of a back-to-back 4-2. So they're going to be a factor here down the stretch in terms of the standings for the East, if only as a spoiler. Certainly they're not going to make the playoffs, but they'll be a factor in determining who finishes at the top of this East division, because they're a team right now under the new coaching regime that is simply not going to go away. Don Granato has really figured out a way to bring something out of these Sabres that we did not see for the early part of the year.
Yeah, the opportunity they have now is to see what the youngsters can bring to the table. And you look at the scoring from the last week, and it really gives you a sense of hope for Buffalo. Dylan Cousins, a star in Canada's World Juniors, picked up 4 assists last week. Olofsson continues a decent season with a goal and 2 helpers. All he needs is a healthy Jack Eichel to continue that trend, and you'll see that next year. All things go well with his upcoming surgery there. Rasmus Dahlin has had a year stuck in neutral, but that's more of a aspect to do with the surroundings that he's in a desperate situation in Buffalo. I'm looking at a guy like Ristolainen on the blue line. Rasmus Ristolainen, big, rangy guy in the last year of a contract coming up next year. I wonder if a team will take a look at him and try and get him on the cheap. He does have a significant cap hit of about 5+, but he could run a power play for you and bolster a defense. If you have some cap space to take him on, you could get him on the cheap and maybe have Buffalo take on a bit of his contract too. So I wonder if that's a situation that will unfold in the offseason. I'll keep an eye on that for sure. And Carolina, this is a team that is rolling along in first place in a very competitive division race in the Central Division between the top 3 teams. Svechnikov with a couple of goals and assists. Trocheck, fine year, continues, a goal and 2 helpers. Good news, possibly, in the offing with Toivo Teravainen. He's played only 1 game since mid-February and is traveling with the team on the current road trip, so there is hope that he rejoins the lineup soon, and that would be a tremendous boost for a team that is in the thick of the hunt here in this division. Brady Shea is a guy who has not been swept up in the tide, though, this season. A very poor offensive season for a guy who has shown good puck-moving skills and been involved in offenses to the point where he has averaged 25 to 30 points per season in his career. He's only got 7 this year in 43 games. So you wonder if he snaps to attention. Maybe that could be another find, just like the reinsertion of Teravainen. That could be a couple of boons for more success for Carolina in the offing. But another guy to highlight is Martin Netzcash. Continues to be a very good DFS play. He's priced low, despite the fact that he continues to roll along offensively. 5 points in his last five games played on Vinny Trocheck's wing. They've solved their second-line woes with this dynamic duo supporting the big line up front.
Well, anybody that was wondering why Florida was so aggressive at the trade deadline has to look no further than what you just mentioned, that's first in the Central right now, and that's been without Tuukka Teravainen for much of the last 2 months. You get him back in the lineup, you've got Tampa Bay casually just sitting there in third place waiting for Kucherov to come back for the playoffs. It's no surprise to me that Florida had to be a little more aggressive here at the deadline, just because the additions that these teams are going to get heading into the postseason just by getting their own guys back. So, Carolina becomes that much more dangerous for a team that's already in first place there. The fifth place team in a battle for a playoff spot is the Calgary Flames, who went 2-1 last week on the back of Jacob Markstrom. Three starts, two wins, five goals allowed for him. I think the interesting thing to watch about this club is the offense. It's hit or miss, it seems, for them. Some weeks, we're talking about the top guys are thriving, and that was this last week. Elias Lindholm, 5 points in his last four games. Mark Giordano, 4 points in his four. Gaudreau, 4-4. Michael Backlund, 3 points in his last four. Other weeks, we're talking about how Milan Lucic is leading the way in terms of offense, which is never a recipe for success. So that's going to be the linchpin here. Markstrom's a decent goalie. He can, get wins when they need him. I don't think he's a guy that's going to come in and, completely stand on his head and steal you a game. More often than not, maybe once in a while he will. But overall, I don't think that's really his game. It's more just keeping you close and hoping that the offense is there. So if they're going to track down Montreal, which isn't going to be easy when you consider the fact that the Habs still have two games in hand on Calgary in a 6-point lead, but they're not out of it yet. I think they could try and make it competitive here down the stretch, and we'll see. But otherwise, they have no margin for error at all.
Yeah, the two teams that you're talking about there, they have three games coming up that will kind of tell the tale there. If Montreal can grab even one of them, that could shut the Flames out. And really, it's the Flames scoring that has really let them down. Tkachuk has been a real disappointment. He's gotten goalless in his last eight games with only a couple of assists at a time when they desperately need him. On the other hand, Mark Giordano has had a great second half and has really been piling up the points, a solid DFS value play at the moment. In Chicago, they're fifth in the Central Division, trying to stay relevant with after a 2-1 week, and it's the veteran guys that have led the way. Again, most recently, Duncan Keith is the only veteran on the back end who's doing much of anything, picked up a couple of goals, and Patrick Kane continues to do Patrick Kane things. He's among the top scorers in the league, and added to that with a 4-point week last week. He's actually formed a very nice partnership with Alex DeBrincat, who has 3 points. He had 3 points last week, but it looks like we're showing that they're going to be split up on the two scoring lines going forward, and that's an interesting thing for me. I wonder if you have any thoughts about that, but I guess they're just trying to spread the offense and light a fire under some other players. Vinny Hinostroza, a recent addition, returning for the second time in Chicago, had a three-point game recently and lines up as a third-line right winger. He's normally been in the center on the depth chart, so keep an eye on where he's located. He's a very good puck mover, and they have some young guys who know how to put the puck in the net, so I'm kind of keeping an eye on those partnerships going forward. One of those potential guys, the youngsters that can benefit, is Kirby Dach. He now has 5 points in nine games, along with a +5 rating since he returned to the active lineup, and that just shows you how much they missed with him being out. They would not be in the fifth place if he was healthy all year long. They'd be solidly in a playoff spot, in my opinion. His right winger at the moment actually is a guy that I also want to focus on. That's Dylan Strome. He had 3 goals and 1 assist in the same period, and normally a center, but his production has dropped significantly in the last couple of seasons. He's getting a bit of a bump now, and I'm curious to see if he lines up, continues to line up on the wing. I guess with Dach in tow and P.S. Sutter continuing to have a fine year, there's really no room on a scoring line center role for him right now.
Well, I think a lot of the shuffling comes down to, you know, getting Adam Gaudette into the lineup and where they want to use him. He played his first game for the club last night, picked up an assist. He logged just 7.5 minutes of ice time. I think that has more to do with, you know, kind of the games off. You're talking about a guy with the COVID situation in Vancouver before he joined Chicago at the deadline. He hasn't played since March 24th. So that's almost a full month off for Adam Gaudette. And so obviously the ice time is going to be a little bit low here at the onset, but he picks up that helper. And so I think that's a lot of why you're seeing those lines kind of shuffle around and trying to figure out how best to fit Gaudette into the lineup. And I think a top six role, even if you have to move him to the wing, I do like him as a center. But if you're going to move him to the wing to get him in the top six, I really like that move. I'll admit I'm, for whatever reason, I have no like ties to him. He's not from Wisconsin or anything like that. I really like Adam Gaudette and his game, and am excited to see what he can do in a new situation here. In Columbus, it continues to just go from bad to worse there. They went 0-2-1 last week. Yes, Patrick Laine picked up a pair of goals, but now you've got Max Domi, the latest in the doghouse. He scratched from the lineup. The thing that they talk about is against Chicago on April 12th, took 14 minutes in penalties, and you know, including a pretty dumb one there. Did the same thing against Dallas in another game, another 14 minutes worth of penalties, and that enough was enough for John Tortorella, and so he sat last night as a healthy scratch. You know, I have to imagine that won't carry over into more than one game. Trying to send a message, but you have to wonder: are these guys even listening to Torts at this point? You know, we obviously don't know the behind-the-scenes situation but with how bad Columbus has been this year, I wouldn't be surprised to hear that they wanted to go in a different direction in the coaching department there. And so, if they are feeling that Torts is on his way out, I don't know that benching him, you know, a guy like Domi is really going to do any good if they think it's a lame duck. So I don't have any inside information on the Blue Jackets behind the scenes situations, but you at least have to wonder if he's lost the locker room, if they don't have faith that he's going to be back next year.
AJ, I think you hit the nail on the head there. I have no doubt that Tortorella will be is playing out the string now in Columbus, and they have to look at the off ice stuff that really has been a big distraction to what the team is trying to do. And they're not getting the best out of players like Laine and Domi, and the fact that they're butting heads with the coach, not looking good. It's not a good look for the team. It's not a good look for the coach here. And you got to connect the dots. They all come back to Tortorella, and that's never going to be a good outcome. The insane are running the asylum in Columbus, sadly. Columbus is a different story from Colorado, though. In Colorado, they're number one in the Western Division. They went 2-0 last week, and Mikko Rantanen continues to have an outstanding season. 3 goals and 1 assist. That's 3 goals, brings him up to 26. That's more goals than anybody in the league not named Austin Matthews, and he's got a chance to really threaten Matthews on that first line, because they score a ton of goals in Colorado. So that race, I don't think, is done yet, despite the fact he trails the Leafs center by 7. Brendan Saad chipped in with 2 goals. Cale Makar has become relevant again in DFS, and with his regular production offensively, another 3 assists there. And Nate MacKinnon with 3 points on the week as well. But they have to be heartened most by the fact that Devan Dubnyk won his first start here with a 31-save effort in a 4-3 win over St. Louis. That was a key win in the race here to keep St. Louis at bay and keep Colorado at the top of the heap. So they trusted this veteran goalie, and he delivered the first dividend since arriving in town. Nazem Kadri is a bit of a flat spot with no points in his last 5 games played. He's held down the second line center role all season long. They have Carl Soderberg debuting on right wing on the second line here. If Kadri continues to struggle, Soderberg is a candidate to replace him. I don't foresee that yet, but it's something to keep in the back of your minds. Donskoy is out with an illness, and that's probably why Soderberg slots in as a second-line player. He'll normally drop down to third if they're full strength and Kadri's going. So another factor here, though, is Tyson Yost. What do you do with a guy like him? No goals in his last 9 games played, and really struggling offensively all year, but at least he can point to a 4-game assist streak of late.
Well, I think it's important to note, you know, this team has had a number of games off due to.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
A bit of a COVID outbreak there. They're expecting to have Philip Grubauer out for a total of 2 weeks as a result. And Jonas Donskoy is also there. But all signs point to them being able to play on Thursday. That was the original or the most recent projection for them to return. They're down to just two players on the COVID protocol list as of yesterday. So signs pointing in the right direction. Look, this team could not have benefited more from their moves at the deadline. They brought in Jonas Johansson, and I said, this is crazy. And, you know, I wasn't a big fan of it, of the addition. He did okay, not great. And then they get Devin Dubnyk, which made me even question the Jonas Johansson addition even more now that they added Dubnyk. But then you lose Grubauer for 2 weeks because of COVID. Well, it's looking like a pair of good moves. Now Devin Dubnyk can be the starter for a couple of games here. While they wait for Grubauer, Johansson can fill in as a backup, and so they definitely got some benefit from those moves in terms of the situation they found themselves in. But I expect this team to continue to fight right there with Vegas the rest of the way for the number one spot. Another team fighting for a playoff spot is the Dallas Stars. 2-0-1 this past week. Look, they're still sixth in the Central, but we talked about this, you know, throughout the year. They lost so many games at the early part of the season to other team COVID issues, and then they also had the cancellations due to weather and power related concerns down in Dallas that we knew this could happen. They had just so many games in hand that they could really make a late surge here. They are 3 points back on Nashville with three games in hand on them. They're ahead of Chicago as well for that last spot with two games in hand over the Hawks. And so this is a dangerous team right now that is, you know, kind of playing a bit of catch up. But I really think they are going to be nipping at the Predators' heels the whole rest of the way here and could still make themselves a playoff team.
Yeah, and sadly, they're going to have to do it, obviously, without the likes of Sagan and Radulov, who would be two-thirds of any team's top six. And so really, they're going at this race with one hand tied behind their back. But you highlighted the fact that their scorers are producing right now, and that gives hope. If you got an offense that's clicking, you got a chance. And so what do they say in the movies? You say there's a chance? Well, there might be. There might be in Dallas. In Detroit, there is no chance this year. But the Red Wings did put together a 2-1 week last week, and I want to point out a couple of bright spots, I guess, in the lineup that you can look forward to in the future. Michael Rasmussen had a goal and two helpers. This guy's 6'6", AJ, and boy, he looks as big as that sounds, and is getting a shot at the second-line center position. And I think if he can hold his own, that would be a great look there behind Dylan Larkin, giving him a nice-looking 1-2 punch. Troy Stetcher has been a stabilizing force on the back end, not known for offense, but he picked up two goals on the week too, so he's delivering on exactly what was expected of him. And they got some good news. After Bernier returned his first game back, he was thrashed with a 7-spot. But looks back in the groove after allowing only 4 goals against in his last 2 starts last week, stopping 60 of 64 shots overall. We talked about the deal that they made with Washington that brought in Jacob Vrana as well as a couple of draft picks. He looked good in his Wings debut, lining up at left wing on the top line, while plenty of other veteran players are sidelined here. At least they've got Vrana and Rasmussen pointed in the right direction, giving their offense a bit of a new look and some hope for the future.
Oh, absolutely. And they are expected to get Evgeny Svechnikov. Actually, they got him back last night. So that's obviously a step in the right direction there. He picked up an assist in the game. So he'll fit into a top six role for them as well now that he's got that injury behind him. In Edmonton, a slow week for them. They played just one game last week. So we'll take a little bit of a longer approach, in my opinion, on their week. Mike Smith has looked really good in his last four starts, 3-1 in that stretch. And really, if you eliminate the five spot that Calgary hung on him, the other games, he gave up one goal, no goals, and one goal in the other three, in the three wins. So really playing some of his best hockey right now. And that, again, that makes this a really hard team to beat. If they're getting solid netminding, we know the offense is there. We know all the names that we can always point to and talk about here. But having good goaltending, it's been streaky all year. I think that's going to continue to be the case for Edmonton. Obviously, the concern is that, you know, they're still without Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, who's missed a couple of games here, four games, in fact. So they need to get him back sooner rather than later. That's going to stretch their depth. But, you know, they have the tools. And in my opinion, you know, you put McDavid and Draisaitl, you break them up, put them center. So you still have center depth there. That would be my approach. But, you know, they have options, but you want him back sooner rather than later for sure.
Yeah, I want to take a second to take a look at the goaltending situation a little bit longer. Mike Smith, you mentioned he has had a fine year. And I'll always have a soft spot for him because he won me the first of our dollar bets, as you may recall. But Mikko Koskinen is the guy that they have in second string. And if you look at the whole body of work, the average is not where Smith's is. But in his last five or six spot starts, he's been right there delivering decent performances. The numbers are very solid. I think they need to spell Smith a little bit more going forward. They're safely in a playoff spot. It's just a matter of keeping Smith fresher than giving him a deluge of starts. There's no real need to do that, in my opinion, particularly with a guy that they're going to rely on in the postseason. It looks like they're going to lean on him heavily. I think you want him to want to back off a little bit on his usage, so I wonder if we'll see that going forward. In Florida, the Panthers are another team that's ahead of the Lightning in that division. I can't believe the Lightning are third, but you look at the year Carolina and Florida are having, and it starts to make sense. The Panthers went 2-0-1 last week. Anthony Duclair and Frankie Vetrano chipping in with a couple of goals each. Patrick Hornquist with a couple. That tells a story right there. Veteran guys that are leading the way offensively, even though some of the top guns are not producing. Huberdeau did have a three-point week. Barkov a little quieter, though. And so it's good to see secondary scoring here because for years we've been talking about on this podcast the fact that Florida seemed like a one-line team. Well, they've shed that image this year, and look where they are in the standings. I keep touting Chris Driedger, and I know Bobrovsky's had a very nice year, but Driedger has only allowed 13 goals against in his last eight starts. So again, like Edmonton, they have a really nice-looking 1-2 in the Nets going right now, and that's why they're at the top of the division in the hunt for the title there. They also made a smart pickup on waivers, grabbing Nikita Gusev. I thought that was a clever move. New Jersey put him up for waivers, and he's been snapped up here and moved right into the right wing spot on the top line with an assist and six shots on goal over a couple of games played while averaging 17 plus minutes. So you see they're giving him a real fair shot to fit in here. And I think he will eventually and continue to do what he did in the KHL and to a lesser extent in his first stop in the NHL with Jersey, and that is be productive as a scoring winger. Sam Bennett is another guy that they brought in recently, and he had an interesting debut, very big physicality with five hits, but two helpers on the score sheet, slotting in as a second-line center could be the answer there to supporting their top unit offensively. Brandon Montour also chipped in with a nice debut, started with a goal and a plus five over his first two games with his new club. So the Panthers, a team that got stronger at the deadline, and even Marcus Nudivera has been a steady influence on the second pairing on the blue line. So all things are looking very positive for the Panthers, and I think they're primed for a long run in the playoffs.
Absolutely, Paul. Well, one team that's not primed for a run in the playoffs is the LA Kings. An 0-2 week for them. Look, you have to talk about the netminding here. Cal Patterson gets the start in their first game last week, losing effort, but okay, outing, not terrible. And then they go to Quick in the other game. He gives up three goals on eight shots, gets the hook, and Cal Patterson pressed back into action. I think it's safe to assume at this point that Jonathan Quick will 100% be available for Seattle. Whether they want him or not, compared to some of the other options, I don't see a scenario in which the Kings protect Jonathan Quick. He doesn't have any sort of clauses on his contract. He doesn't have a no trade, no move, anything like that. So I think they'll put him up on the block there. They'll protect Cal Patterson, and whether the Kraken want to take him or not remains to be seen. But you would get Jonathan Quick, 2 years at $5.8 million is decent. It's not over the top. You hope that maybe something like that would kind of jumpstart him, but he certainly has not fared well this season. And I definitely think the Kings will be looking for multiple ways, whether it's this or possibly a trade, to get out from under that contract.
Up next, the Minnesota Wild. This team I thought would be in the hunt maybe for fourth place, but right now they reside in third in the Western Division after a 3-0 week, and it's all about the goaltending here. Both players played. Talbot went 2-0, allowing four goals against. Kakkonen with two goals against in his lone start. That, by quick math, is a 2.00 goals against average on the week, AJ, and teams are going to win a lot of games if they get that kind of backstopping proficiency. Up front, some veterans leading the pack here as well. A healthy Matt Zuccarello, four goals, one assist last week, and Zach Parise, three goals, one assist. Nick Bonino, a guy that you have a lot of time for, even chipped in with 6 points on the week. Normally a depth option on scoring, but was front and center this past 7 days. And Marcus Johansson back in the fold and healthy with three assists. And really, that's where I want to begin. Three of these four names have been having trouble sticking in the lineup and being healthy all year long. But this just goes to show you what they're capable when they have all hands on deck. And that's just the way it's going to go for Minnesota. If they can be healthy, they're going to be big trouble in this division. Victor Rask is somehow still holding on to a top six center role here on the downside, looking like he has in the last couple of years after a decent start. He's been blanked in 12 of his last 13 games, but why is he playing top 6 minutes? Well, because a guy like Ryan Hartman hasn't been doing much better from his center perch on the number three line. And strength down the middle is a plus if you want to go far, and this team is lacking in that department. Maybe the one biggest bugaboo that I see in this lineup right now.
It's possible they get some reinforcements down the middle there with Nick Bjugstad. He's joining the team on their upcoming trip. He's played a decent amount of wing, but this is a guy that's a natural center and could maybe help shuffle the deck there a little bit and give them some more options, once he's ready to go. But I agree, Paul, the netminding here has been the story of this team throughout the year. And I think will continue to be. You pointed out the offense they got in the last week. I don't view that as their strength really right now. And I think how far this team goes will be dependent on Cam Talbot more than anything, but also Kaapo Kakkonen. In Montreal, look, I hate to make this the goalie podcast, Paul, but we have to talk about the huge news last night. Carey Price picks up an injury in the game. Last night, a 4-1 loss to the Oilers, appeared to take a puck to the head, which is always a concern. You have to wonder what that looks like. Jake Allen has been really good of late. He actually started three games in their last four, had two wins over that stretch with six goals allowed. So certainly it's not all gloom and doom. But Carey Price is one of the best netminders in the league. There's no question about it, in my opinion. And so to suggest that going to Jake Allen isn't a slight drop, if not even a significant drop, would be underselling what Carey Price means to the team and you know, to their, you know, future and fortune. So they're going to need Allen to step up in a big way. They're going to need guys like Thomas Tatar, Tyler Toffoli, to really step up offensively as well, to kind of mind the gap here. And hopefully they don't have, you know, we talked about the fact that Calgary could try and track them down. And this is the type of injury that could sideline them for a number of games potentially, and really see things go, you know, down the proverbial drain right here before the playoffs.
Yeah, that injury to Price happened on a hit, actually, in front of him. Alex Chiasson was crossing in front of him and got him in the jaw with his shoulder, it looked like. At the same time, the puck was going in the net, and the goal was eventually overturned for goalie interference on a very easy call. But, boy, that blow to the face and the fact that he didn't come back for the second period gives me the thought that they're thinking maybe a concussion here. Nobody said anything yet. But if that's the case, then you're looking at Carey Price possibly missing a week or two, and it comes at a time when they've got that trio of games with Calgary coming up, so it could be a real telltale sign for the fortunes of the Habs, and they got to hope that Jake Allen brings it, and I don't think they're going to look for help from the depth options of the lineup here in those critical games. Caden Primo was certainly up, but hasn't suited up yet in a game this season, so it's going to be Jake Allen's ball to carry in a critical junction for the Montreal Canadiens. The New Jersey Devils mired in the basement here. We know they shed some key players last week, so it's no surprise that they went 0-4. In fact, now that's six straight losses overall. Mackenzie Blackwood continues to be that carries the mail in the nets. Three game starts for him, and in line for the Purple Heart, I guess, with a lot of shots on goal and 10 goals against in that period of time. Not great, but not terrible either. It's just the offense has been missing. Despite the fact they have a couple of flashy centers in Nico Hischier and Jack Hughes, that duo has combined for only 3 points in the four games last week, and any team needs much more than that from their top two guys if they want their fortunes to change. Sharon Govich has been a really neat surprise, AJ, and aren't you glad that I said that name instead of having to put it on your shoulders here? With all the multi-syllable foreign names that are in the league, I grabbed that one for you. He got a goal and two assists. Continue a fine debut season for him. P.K. Subban, with a goal and two helpers, has surpassed last season's point total of 19 already, but he's playing a much less physical game this year, AJ. I've watched him, and the hits and block shots are way down over last season. I just think he's playing around the fringe a little bit more than I'm used to seeing from him, not really engaged, and that might be a function of the fact that there's nothing really much to play for in New Jersey, and a bit of a lost season, but I'm heartened by the fact that at least his offensive game seems to have returned in a small way. Another defenseman to keep an eye on, winger to keep an eye on. I think when I see Foot, the last name, I think of Adam Foot, a longtime star in the NHL from the back end, but his son Nolan picked up an assist in his debut as a left winger on the third line, and because of the pedigree, I'm keeping an eye on him going forward. Wingers Zacha and Bratt have been out of the lineup here, and that helps the misfortune for the Devils, account for the misfortune of the Devils, rather. They're both coming off the IR this week on their current road swing, so maybe the offense will get a shot in the arm when they get inserted back into the lineup.
Well, in Nashville, they're clinging to fourth in the Central, as we said, with Dallas nipping on their heels. A 1-2 week certainly not going to help them get where they're going to go. UC Saros, the goaltender of record in all three of those games, so just the one win with eight goals allowed. Offensively, they're looking okay. Roman Josi leading the way with 4 points in four games. Victor Arvidsson, two goals and one assist. Mikael Granlund, a goal and two assists, and, you know, Ryan Johansson, no goals, but three assists in the last week. Here's the concerning part for me. None of those points for anybody came on the power play. They didn't get a single point on the power play last week, and that's going to be a concern in terms of their long-term outlook here. They did pick up a shorthanded goal courtesy of Eric Halla, but, you know, that's not going to win you any championships. It'll help. But you need to be converting on the power play as well. So some concerns there about the offense a little bit, mostly, you know, to the man advantage side of it. And obviously they're going to want a little bit better out of Saros. Not a bad week, but they need more and maybe they'll give Pekka Rinne another game or two here down the stretch to see if he can rediscover his past form.
Well, another team that's looking for more is the Islanders. They only scored 2 goals over their 3 games. It's a wonder they actually won one of them in a 1-0 shutout. Ilya Sorokin allowed a total of 8 goals against over his last 5 starts, kind of getting both hands on the top goalie job here of late. At least that's a positive development from the defensive side of the puck. They have made a number of additions, and so that causes a few switch-ups here in the way they line up. Travis Zajac took over the center role on the first line, which I found a little bit surprising, but that move is designed to bolster left-wing scoring, which has been a black hole here. They've entrusted Barzal to take that load, and so he is a noted goal scorer, of course, and point getter. So that makes that left side look a lot better right away. But Barzal's been a center here the whole time he's been with the club. I'm surprised at this move. AJ just shows how desperate they are for the wing position. Kyle Palmieri certainly fills in the right wing role with a little more optimism on the right wing, lining up on the second line here too. So that new look is filtering through the lineup, and we'll see if it materializes in more offense that's needed here. As expected, Braden Coburn slid into a third line pairing in his New York Islander debut, and that solidifies the back end, but that's been the backbone of this team for years. They're hoping also to get a boost on the left wing as Michael Dalcoli is back from IR. He's bounced in and out of the lineup, though. I don't know that he's the answer, but to keep an eye on him in his left wing role in the third line for now.
Well, I think what you're seeing is the fact that they're still trying to figure out how best to replace Anders Lee and what sort of combination there. And then also, how do you fit in Zajac and Palmieri? Look, that's a lot of change for a team to go through, you know, in a short period of time there. You lose one of your, you know, your top line guys. You add 2 guys that, you know, rightfully so, you want to try and fit into the top 6. So, there's going to be a lot of shuffling here, and they need to figure it out sooner rather than later. I don't think they really have to worry about the safety of their playoff spot at this point, but anything can happen with, you know, 10, 12 games remaining. So, they're going to want to hope to get that all shored up sooner rather than later. And one of the reasons why is their crosstown rivals. The New York Rangers had a really good week last week. 4 wins. Shesterkin played in 3 of those games, picked up 3 wins with just 3 goals allowed and a pair of shutouts. So the Rangers are not going away. And boy, have they gotten some offense out of their top guys. Panarin, 4 goals, 6 helpers. Buchnevich, 4 goals, 1 helper. Chris Kreider, 2 goals. The list goes on and on. Zibanejad had a number of points. Fox continues to roll with the assists from the back end. And so this team is another team that's not going to go away. They're making a late push here to see if they can challenge, you know, Boston, Pittsburgh, the Islanders, you know, and see if they can put themselves in the mix. I think they're probably going to need to be just about this perfect to do it. But you can't sleep on this team. That is for sure.
And Ottawa Senators continue to be a tough out in the North Division. They're being a factor in this playoff race. Even last night, they dealt Calgary a crippling 4-2 loss at a time when they were hoping to gain a little ground on the Canadiens, and they took a misstep there. The Senators 2-1 last week, 1-0 so far this week, rolling along. And one of the guys that's really leading the parade is Connor Brown, former Toronto Maple Leaf player. He had an 8-game consecutive goal-scoring streak snapped last week, but he got a pair last night. I have plenty of time for this guy. He delivers an honest effort, and a guy that Patrick Marleau-like so far this season shows up every night and chipping in with regular offense for the Senators, and one of their team leaders for sure. Brady Tkachuk continues a fine season. He is also a capable leader, very young guy, future captain, in fact, I think here. I don't think there's any doubt. 2 goals and 2 helpers for him. Drake Batherson continues to show that he's a lights-out offensive scoring machine. 2 goals and 1 assist, continuing a fine season for him. Thomas Chabot, a minute eater on the back end, and if you can snag him in DFS play and plug him into your lineup, he plays almost half the games. Night in, night out. He picked up 4 assists last week. The offense seems to be rolling along very effectively. This is a team that's relentless in their puck pursuit and creates a number of scoring chances, and a number of them materialized last week. They are also gaining from their structure with the return of Matt Murray and the Nets back from the IR. He had a shutout over Montreal and a three spot against Winnipeg, and then receded for the win last night, I think, too. So starting a real hot streak in the Nets for him after returning from that injury list situation. Even Josh Norris, one goal and four assists, now has 8 points in his last seven games played. So that's a thumbnail on some young offensive players in Ottawa that are really striking it rich right now and could be some cheap DFS value plays.
In Philadelphia, things took a turn for the worse in terms of the goaltending. You had Carter Hart play a solid game against the Penguins on April 15th, gave up just one goal, and honestly a pretty bad goal, but was solid the rest of the game, picked up a win in the shootout there. And then just before puck drop against Washington, it comes out that he's dealing with a lower body injury. So they turn things over to Alex Lyon, last minute, who did not fare well, gave up 5 goals on 40 shots. Brian Elliott in the last week has played in 2 games, a loss and an overtime loss, for a sub 900 save percentage for him as well. You finally, it's like, oh, Carter Hart has this, gives up this bad goal, bounces back, has a really good game against, in-state rivals. Like, maybe this is the momentum change that he needs to finish out strong on the year. And then he's hurt and not available. And it's just a kick him when you're down situation for the Flyers here. And look, I just don't know how this team can even hope to get back in the mix in terms of the playoff spot. Yes, they've got 12 games remaining, but they're 9 points back of Boston. The Rangers are ahead of them in the standings. It would take a pretty Herculean effort here from everybody throughout the lineup, I think, for the Flyers to return to being a playoff contender in this division. And look, if this is what it takes for the Flyers to be on the bottom of the division, Paul, I will predict they win the East every single year moving forward. Because, I guess it will go back to be the Metropolitan. But, the one time I trust the Flyers to win the division, they just completely come out and tank, and I'm okay with that.
Well, you know what? They fooled both of us this year, and they fooled a lot of the pundits around the league who thought they'd be a contending team for the top of this division. They looked like an also-ran, and it's because of the goaltending that they really are in trouble. It's the goaltending that has been a surprise for Pittsburgh, but on the flip side, the Pens can point to two youngsters who have really carried the mail with great efficiency in the Nets, and we're starting to see a bit of separation. I mean, Jarry has played the most games by far on the season, but DeSmith's numbers have been better than his for the most part. Of late, that's flipped, though. In his last 4 starts, Casey DeSmith has allowed a whopping 17 goals against, and that's why Jarry's getting even more of the starts recently. He's only allowed 7 in his last 4 starts, so the tandem has been solid for much of the season, but only one of the guys is going right now, and I will be putting him in the Nets for my DFS team as we look ahead to the segment coming up at the end of the show for FanDuel and DraftKings players. Brian Rust remains a sneaky good DFS value play for me too. AJ playing around the right wing with Sidney Crosby certainly helps. He's got a boatload of points in his last 5 games played, looking really good there. And he's been a solid partner for Crosby whenever they've been together. I'm glad to see he's getting a nice long run again beside the captain in that role. Jeff Carter picked up an assist in his debut playing second line center. Of course, Malkin is still out, and he's just started to skate on his own, so his return is not imminent. Maybe you can shed some light on that. But Jared McCann, another option who they've plugged in at center, has been shifted to the left side on that second line. He had 2 more points last week and really continues to be a solid utility player for the Pens, and another cheap DFS value play when the Penguins line it up.
Yeah, absolutely. And Brian Rust has really transitioned from more of a kind of a gritty plugger, speedster, kind of penalty kill guy, that was great to have in a top six role. And just the last like 2, maybe even if you want to call it 3 seasons, has developed a scoring touch, which, was not there for the early part of his game. And it's why he's, he makes, pretty modest amount of money compared to some of the rest of the top players in the league in terms of goals, production, and quick math here, I think it's about 3.5 on his contract. And so that's really been a boon for the Penguins the last number of years, and obviously everything in terms of line combinations will change. We're probably still at least another, another week away, maybe a couple games away from Kasperi Kapanen getting back into the lineup. On April 12th, they said 10 to 14 days. So for now, you're looking at McCann, Newman, Jeff Carter, and Jason Zucker on that second line. But obviously that's going to change up here when we get, when we get some more healthy guys back, hopefully more healthy returns than injury returns. And then obviously Malkin will change things up significantly. But I like what I'm seeing out of the partnership of McCann and Carter, to the point where I think the best plan might be to keep those two guys together on a third line. In San Jose, we obviously talked about the big news last night with Patrick Marleau. That's about the only bright spot for this team right now. They went 0-4 last week, five straight losses. We said good things about Marty Jones, Paul, and then it went off the rails when three games with 12 goals allowed over that stretch. So, had a decent outing last night, all things considered, despite coming up with the loss, faced a ton of rubber. So he only gave up two goals on 40 shot attempts. So that's a pretty good performance by him. But the thing is, we're going to see a lot more of Marty Jones here down the stretch, just because they did opt to trade away Devin Dubnyk. Maybe we see a little bit of some of their other, young guys that are minding the gap here. But I expect it'll be pretty much Marty Jones every single night. And I think last week is more what we've come to expect out of Marty Jones of late. Another guy that, they don't really have too many other options. So I don't know that they'll want to do this, but they could certainly consider trying to leave Marty Jones open in terms of the expansion draft, although you certainly have to consider he has a modified no trade clause. So I don't know all the details on that one, Paul. That might not come into play if it's not a no movement clause. So it is possible they could expose him based on what I'm seeing here.
AJ, in the Western Division, we'll continue with the theme of looking at the playoff structure a little bit, standings a little bit. St. Louis outside looking in. I wouldn't have picked that at the beginning of the season. I don't think either one of us did, in fact. They went 0-2 last week. Mike Hoffman has been a guy that's had trouble fitting in here. Two goals and two helpers, though. Last week he was trying to stem the flow of this downturn on the week, but didn't have much help. Since coming off the IR, Sammy Blais is one guy who's been getting top 6 minutes here to kind of turn things around. He has 5 points and five games played on the left wing in that situation. Tyler Bozak, another guy who has been in the infirmary much of the season, is on a nice streak himself with 6 points in his last six games played, and properly slotted, in my opinion, as the third-line center here. Colton Pareko is another guy who's six games into his return for the D pairing on the second unit there. Picked up his first point, though. They're looking for more offense from him. In fact, they've got a couple other defensemen that are paying a lot more money there, too, that aren't really delivering offensively like we thought they would either. We've talked about them ad nauseum all season long. Torrey Krug is one of those guys. I thought that he would fit in a much bigger way than he has. Certainly, the plus-minus is decent, but and the assists are there, but not much in terms of goal scoring. Same Justin Falk, his partner there. I think that's too many offensive eggs in one basket. I'd like to see them spread that offensive talent and maybe shield them with good defensive counterparts in those pairings. Maybe that's the solution. In behind them, Jordan Binnington's been up and down all season, and he was down last week, allowing 7 goals against over his two starts. They also are hurt by the fact that Vince Dunn is listed as day-to-day after blocking a shot on Saturday, and they got to hope that that's not a serious injury situation that would hurt their blue line again.
Absolutely, and the thing with that injury is it maybe you figure Dunn not a huge contributor, but any kind of injury is really going to stretch their depth. They have 3 games in hand on Arizona, so they are certainly not out of it. I took a look, Paul. We both had the Blues slotted comfortably into third in this division, and they're definitely not going to finish third. Now, they still have a chance at the fourth spot, but the top of this division, I think, is just in a class of its own. And I would anticipate, obviously, they have to play the games. Playoff hockey is a different different animal, but I would anticipate, regardless of whether it's Arizona, St. Louis, or even San Jose, this fourth team probably going to be bounced pretty quickly by Vegas or Colorado from the playoffs. One team that won't be bounced quickly from the playoffs is the Tampa Bay Lightning. Now, the one exception would be if something happens to Andre Vasilevsky, because, man, has Curtis McIlhenny been terrible of late. He gave up 7 goals in his most recent outings. If you used him on DraftKings, that accounted to a minus 14 point production for you. If you used him on FanDuel, it was even worse at minus 16. So they're certainly going to need to ride Andre Vasilevsky, which we said at the start of the season was something that they were going to do. We anticipated Vasilevsky would be right up there at the top in terms of, you know, games played at the end of the season. And I anticipate that will continue to be the case. Obviously, the injury to Steven Stamkos is a pretty significant one. You know, it's one of those things. It sounded, Paul, I know you talk about you kind of hate the lack of information. Well, it starts with, if you look at RotoWire and look at the news, you talk about, oh, Stamkos left the game in the third period. Then he was going to be out for one game and doubtful for the next. Didn't play in the game he was doubtful. Then they did rule him out for 2 games. And then suddenly he's put on long-term injured reserve. Now, they went retroactive with that. That gives them a little bit of coverage. They can use some of those games that were already missed. But it really went from, you know, nothing injury, even with retroactive. He's missed 5. He'll have to miss at least 5 more because of the long-term IR designation. And now they're expecting him to only resume skating in 7 to 10 days. So, I really think that's a concern for them. John Cooper said he's, quote, extremely optimistic Stamkos will be ready when he's eligible to come off IR May 2nd. But now you're looking at a team that, you know, they're going to be fine in terms of a playoff, but what does it do to the, you know, chemistry and line combinations and everything when suddenly just before the playoffs you're going to add back Stamkos and potentially Nikita Kucherov once the playoffs start? That's going to shuffle things up in a way that might be a little uncomfortable. I think they'll get through it, but you would like to see those hiccups, potential hiccups happen during the regular season than in a first-round playoff series.
And AJ, we haven't had a mini rant in this episode, but I'm going to give you one now. The Leafs were 0-2-2 last week, and the darling of the media, Jack Campbell, was winless in 3 starts and 9 goals against. And, trooper that he is, the guy takes all these losses on himself, blames himself entirely. I'm getting a little tired of that act a little bit, but one guy who has been maligned in the media kind of quietly, but consistently all year long, is John Tavares, and it's largely to do with the $11 million-plus contract that he his cap hit. But he's delivered the goods, as not only as a team leader here, but as a guy who lines up every night against the other team's top lines, produces offensively despite a revolving door of players on both wings, it seems. And the last week was a signature week for him. He had 7 points to lead this offense and has been really on fire offensively for quite a while now, despite all the changes around him. Auston Matthews continues to hum along with 2 more goals, giving him a lead leading 33. I think he's safe at home and cooled out in terms of the Rocket Richard trophy, but I think he also has a shot to go over 40, and I wouldn't have predicted that for any shooter this season. The trouble spot, though, is Zach Hyman. He had 3 points last week before he was the victim of a bad hit on Sunday night and a knee-on-knee collision with Canucks Alex Edler, who was subsequently suspended for 2 games. The power play has been in an awful funk here, something like 2 for their last 50, and one of those goals came on in the later stages of a 5-minute power play on the weekend against a Canucks team that was playing their first game in 3 weeks. So really, they had to reach the bottom of the barrel here to get a modicum of success with the extra man. I'm shocked with their inability with the talent base here. That talent base gets a shot in the arm, though, this week, as Nick Foligno will make his debut later on in a couple of key tilts against Winnipeg. Couldn't come at a better time for him, and hoping to fill the absence of Hyman, who was expected to miss a couple of weeks going forward. Other news from the infirmary is Freddie Anderson is working out on his own amid a shroud of secrecy. there's no time frame for his return. I don't expect to be much before the playoffs, but I wonder, can they really trust a guy to go into game one of the playoffs without playing a game in the regular season? I'm curious to see how they navigate that situation. And they're also giving youngster Nick Robertson a shot to play in a scoring line winger role. I like this aspect. Normally you see a scoring type youngster, they call him up and they say, okay, we'll give you fourth line minutes, play 7 minutes. You don't get anything for that. Why don't we put a guy in a real scoring opportunity if that's what he is and see what he can do? So far, he hasn't lit the lamp, but he hasn't looked out of place. And I think he's getting a real fair shot to show his skills, and I'm happy to see it.
Well, Paul, I'm going to do you a favor and just tell you, don't watch tonight's game. Just save yourself the hassle. I mean, look, you said, you know, you've got Anderson is out for sure. Zach Hyman is out. Nick Foligno is not set to meet up with the team until tomorrow. Willie Nylander can't play because he missed a team meeting. So clearly he didn't learn enough from from Patrick Marleau while he was here in Toronto. And then Ilya Mikheyev is questionable for tonight's game as well. So it's going to be a little thin in terms of the forward complement, in my opinion. Yes, you still have Matthews and Tavares and Marner, but if I were you, Paul, I would save yourself the hassle. Don't watch tonight's game. Wait till these guys are back and available, and you can have a full lineup. And boy, wouldn't it be nice to have Jimmy Vesey or Travis Boyd available right now? Which, you know, that's not a knock on the Leafs. That's more Vancouver taking advantage of the situation. But for a team that had depth as one of its biggest strengths, especially in the forward complement, losing those two guys on the waiver wire is certainly hurting at this point, because I think you would love to have them available to help out tonight. That's for sure. In Vancouver, speaking of them, they only played the one game last week, but they got a win in that effort. And we got to see some Braden Holtby, very infrequent usage of Braden Holtby this season. Has played a total of just 13 games. Look, he hasn't played that few games since 2011-12 season, when he saw action in a mere 7 contests. It was the year afterwards in which he kind of took over as the main choice for the Capitals at the time. So, obviously that has to do with the fact that Thatcher Demko is still recovering from having been on the NHL's COVID protocol list. They want him to get a few more practices to get back to 100% and available. But, obviously, given the extended layoff there, a win is an incredible thing by Vancouver in that one. And they've talked about the team not feeling ready or prepared for those contests. So, good on them for powering through and making it through Sunday's game.
Up next, we talk about the Vegas Knights. They went 2-0. They went 4-0 last week. They're the hottest team in the league right now, AJ, with 6 straight wins. And I won my DFS value play last week with their involvement. I also won another one later in the week with their involvement too, and a couple of double stacks that I did. So I'm on a hot streak there. Can't wait to get into tonight's action as well. But we'll talk a little bit more about the Knights' success, and it's reliant on not only the top guys going offensively, but depth guys and guys that aren't normally counted on for offense. Alex Tuch, very useful player here, though. A guy that is underrated only in other locales, but local fans of the club know how valuable he is to this team, largely in a third-line role. 3 goals and 1 helper hit for him. We mentioned the big boys combining for 15 points. That's Stone and Pacioretty with 8 and 7, respectively. Nicholas Roy with 3 goals and 1 helper. Chandler Stephenson, a guy that I didn't know if he was going to be up to a top 6 role, but lo and behold, a 2-2 week last week is just symptomatic of what he's done much of the season, contributing regular offense and still a very cheap value play in DFS, which I don't understand, quite frankly. As long as he plays with Stone and Pacioretty, he's going to be in on the action when this team is rolling, as they are right now. Alex Pietrangelo, 2 goals and looking after the defensive responsibilities, along with Shea Theodore, 4 assists for him, and Alex Martinez, 3 assists. So clearly, everything is rolling offensively for this team. And then, I'm going to mention before you do, Marc-Andre Fleury reached the 20-win mark. Once again, his numbers on the season, outstanding. He's in line for the Vezina Trophy conversation with a 2.09 goals against and a .925 save percentage. My co-host is smiling broadly as I say that. Along with Robin Lehner, this is still the best net pairing in the league as we forecast. And I mentioned Chandler Stephenson. to show how well he's gone. He got to his last year's point total in 26 fewer games this year. I say he's still undervalued as a DFS player, but not in the Paul Bruno books when he starts, when I make my picks for DFS play. Riley Smith listed as day-to-day after an injury on the weekend. We'll keep an eye on that situation, and they may have to adjust their roster a little bit if it's a longer-term situation.
Well, Paul, you didn't totally steal my thunder. When you started talking about Fleury, I thought you were going to mention the fact that he's now moved into fourth overall on the all-time career wins list, getting past Ed Belfour there. Needs just three more to tie Roberto Luongo. So I would anticipate, they are splitting the crease. So maybe not, but I would imagine that he'll get past Luongo before the end of the season here. And it was interesting to hear afterwards. I was not aware of this, but now with Fleury moving into fourth overall, all four of the top most winningest goalies of NHL history are all from Quebec. So not sure what they're putting in the water there in Quebec, but obviously they have turned out some of the best goaltenders of all time. In Washington, speaking of some of the, one of the best players of all time, and Alexander Ovechkin had a good week last week. Despite the team going 2-2, Ovechkin had 3 goals and 2 assists. But he wasn't the biggest offensive story coming out of the U.S. Capitol there. That was Anthony Mantha, who burst onto the scene with 4 goals and 1 assist. There maybe were some people, I hadn't heard any, but maybe some people were questioning that decision to give up as much as they did. But Mantha certainly proved them right, coming on really strong, including a pair of power play points as well. And John Carlson with another phenomenal week. No goals, but that's not really what you're asking from him. 7 helpers in those 4 games. So, you look at these offensive numbers, it's a little surprising that they went 2-2. Orlov, Oshie, Connor Sherry, all with 4 points across the board. Sherry actually got a new contract last week, an extension with them for another 2 years at $3 million overall. So that's a pretty cost, $1.5 million a year is pretty cost controlled for a guy that you can use, a top 9 role for them. It's a big week, a little surprising on the overall win column there based on the offensive production.
Yeah, and you didn't even talk at length about the 1-2 punch at center, which for my money is one of the best in the league, if not the best and most consistent. You got Nick Backstrom, who in his career has been a point-per-game center, whether or not he gets Ovechkin on his wing, and right now he does. So keep an eye on that, because he and Kuznetsov have flipped that responsibility, that lucky responsibility. Actually, it looks like we've made the switch that Kuznetsov is now paired with Ovechkin, so that's how quickly it moves up and down with those two guys. But fear not, Nick Backstrom has got the hot Anthony Mantha on his wing too, so that's a pretty good looking second line with TJ Oshie, who's been on fire on the right wing there. So the two centers, though, I find they come in cheap in DFS play, cheaper than what I would normally value them at, given their rate of production. And finally, we take a look at the Winnipeg Jets. They are on the basis of a 2-2 week last week, still in second place, but they have a couple of key games against division leaders from Toronto later this week as they wait for Toronto to come to town. Leafs have one game before they get there. On the second of back-to-backs tomorrow, they'll face Winnipeg, but tonight they got a tilt against another division rival that is a key game for them before they move on to the Manitoba Capital. And in Winnipeg, Connor Hellebuyck, though, not at the top of his game right now for my money, AJ. In the 3 starts last week, 9 goals against, a save percentage below 90%. So I'm happy to see that as a Leaf fan, as a Leaf roll in. He's not at the top of his game, because when he is, he's the best goalie in the league. The fact of the matter is, this team has really benefited from outstanding seasons from a pair of wingers that are not guys that you think about first. When you think about the Jets, you think about Scheifele and Blake Wheeler, but Nikolai Ehlers has been amazing all season long, and one of the league's leading goal scorers, chipped in with 3 goals and 1 assist. Kyle Connor, another one of the top scoring wingers in the league, 3 goals and 1 assist. These guys are critical to the structure of the Winnipeg offense, and they don't get their due because of the likes of Scheifele and Wheeler, and even Pierre-Luc Dubois, who has started to fit in and chip in offensively. He had 3 assists last week. Neil Pionk has snapped out of a scoring funk with 3 points as well. Wheeler, is finally cleared to play following a concussion. He'll suit up on Thursday against the Maple Leafs. They'll welcome their captain back there for sure. That will drop Andrew Kopp down to a third-line role. He had chipped in effectively in a scoring role situation, but they're so deep that they can afford to drop him back to a third-line situation. So it looks very promising for Winnipeg to have a very good playoff this year, but they're going to need Hellebuck to bounce back from where he is right now, AJ.
Yeah, I'll just highlight the point you made about the two wingers there in Ehlers and Connor. There are 12 players right now that have reached the 20-goal mark, and they're the two guys from Winnipeg. So to your point, it's not Shifley or Wheeler that has reached that threshold. Obviously good years by them. And addition to the team by just getting Wheeler back, that will make them that much better. And hopefully they can, start rolling and get Hellebuck back up to form if they're really going to challenge in that Canadian division come playoff time.
AJ, it's time we swing into our DFS play this week, and I'm going to remind listeners, I'm red hot again. I've been on several streaks this season, had my best year in DFS play, and I'm optimistic that I've got another good lineup here, and I'm sure you got a solid one in your DraftKings setup. I'm anxious to hear it, so why don't you share it with our listeners right now, pal?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we're not doing the video anymore, but if we were, users would be able to see me decked to the nines in Penguins gear right now. I've got my gold Sidney Crosby jersey on, the 2017 championship hat as well. And that has to do with the fact that the Penguins are playing New Jersey tonight. And so I'm going to go heavy on Pittsburgh. I'm going to do kind of a 1-2 from each of their top two lines. So I'll do Sidney Crosby at 8,200, pair him up with Jake Guentzel at 7,400. Certainly, if you don't want to pay that much, I would say flipping Guentzel out for Brian Rust would save you some money and is certainly a decent option as well. So something to consider. I'm going to stick with Guentzel for now. He is one of those guys that's on, the 20-goal list for the season. So I'm going to go with Guentzel, but an argument could absolutely be made for Rust in that spot. The other 1-2 is, I talked about this earlier, Jeff Carter, 5,100, Jared McCann, 5,600 on DraftKings. So I'm going to use those two guys. That should round out, most of those guys should get some power play opportunities. McCann's been really good on the number one power play unit. Carter slots in with the second unit there. I've obviously spent up big, so I needed to find some value, and I looked specifically to the Tampa Bay Lightning for those value guys. Tyler Johnson has had a really up and down year, and so because of that, his salary just $2,600 tonight, and he was playing bottom six role. They moved him back into a top six spot last night. He picked up an assist, and I think that's hopefully a sign of things to come. And then I'm also going to use Blake Coleman. He comes at 3,300. He's on that third line with them. A little bit of a long shot in terms of getting some production out of Coleman. But, 2 assists in his last 3 games. He is kind of stuck in a 5-game goal drought, but, has shown some signs of life, some shots on goal as well in his couple of games. So I think there's some good value to be had out of those two Lightning players. They've got a tough matchup with Carolina, there's no doubt about it, but I think that's just going to lower their drafted percentage and makes them a more intriguing option in GPP contests. On the defensive front, look, I'm going to go name and matchup over recent production, and I'm going to go with Miro Heiskanen. 5,500 coming in for them tonight. I understand that the numbers have definitely been down for him this year, but the fact that, that's going to serve to lower his value. He's got 3 points in his last 3 games and just a juicy matchup with Detroit. And I think this is a good opportunity, good time to use him, even with the kind of lower production from what you would expect out of him. His power play minutes have stayed really high. And I think, there is still enough time for him to maybe push for that 30-point threshold. It'll be tough, but I think he could potentially get there with a bit of a strong run. And then on the other side, I'm going to go with Keith Yandle for Florida. They've got a good matchup again tonight with Columbus. 3,900 for him, a cheap option, and they need somebody to step up and, you know, once, you know, from the blue line and chip in there, you know, based on the injury to Aaron Ekblad and Mackenzie Weegar is banged up as well. And so I think Keith Yandel, certainly a good potential opportunity there. In the Nets, look, you got to look at the matchup. And Paul, you alluded to it for your lineup earlier. I'm going with it as well. Tristan Jarry tonight for the Penguins going up against the New Jersey Devils. He's been really good of late, has a great matchup tonight. They're at home. The Penguins have been phenomenal at home. So that obviously bodes well for them.
Well, we have some commonality in our lineups, I find. Not a lot, but I've got the same two Penguins in there, just so you know. I'll get to them in a sec, but I'm gonna sound like a homer tonight. I'm betting on the Leafs big line to come up big for them.
I told you not to do it, Paul. Well, I told you not to even watch the game tonight.
I'm bucking that trend, and I'm going to not take your advice, so I might eat these words. But Austin Matthews is money, AJ, this year. Regardless of how the team is going, at least he's going strong. I mentioned their Bonnerbund power play had only two goals in the past month. Well, he has both of them, and I think he's in line for a big night against a Vancouver team that's still – they're missing a lot of key players. It was all heart and soul that first game back, but a lot of pundits have said that may be a dead cat bounce here, and you wonder if they can do it twice in a row. I'm certainly not betting on it. So I got Matthews in there. I got Marner in there as well. Both of these guys game in, game out perform, and I'm able to offset their big money by the fact that their winger, Alex Galchenyuk, still priced at only $3,800. He's going to have a chance to get a couple of points just by being on the ice with these guys game in, game out. Can't believe the price tag is so low, and I bet he bulges the twine tonight. That'll be my prop bet tonight. Alex Galchenyuk will score a goal. And another thing that I'm going to look at is the schedule, the time of the games. I like to have a hope going into later games, AJ, so that's why I look at the Anaheim-LA game, and I think this is a time where I've got to try and get a couple of guys from LA into my lineup and retain that hope to pull off a late win if I'm trailing. And I throw in as my second center, Anze Kopitar, who's had an outstanding season, averaging almost 14.5 points per game in DFS play, priced at $7,100. I think that's low for what he gives them game in, game out. And Alex Iafallo, who recently signed a long-term deal here, has proven to be the real deal as an offensively capable winger on that top line. His production's been a little bit spotty of late, but I predict a big night for him, and only cost me $4,400. So that's the bulk of my offense. I agree with you on the Keith Yandel pick because of the matchup here against Columbus. They're a team in complete disarray, as we mentioned, with the coaching fights that Tortorella's picking with some of the better players on his team, and that can't bode well for their fortunes, a team that is on the outside looking in, while the Panthers are at the top of the division, and you said it, they have no other offensively capable blue liner other than Yandel, and I think he gets the lion's share of all the responsibilities in offensive situations and power play situations here tonight, and I think he takes advantage. Jacob Slavin gets a tough matchup against Tampa, but I think the Canes have been the equal of the Bolts all season long, and Slavin has had a nice year offensively, so I'm plugging him in for a cheap value at $3,900. That's a total of $8,000 spent on two first-pairing defensemen that I see in tonight's lineup. And I love your call on Jake Guentzel tonight, AJ. I think New Jersey Devils are way in over their heads tonight, and this is one of the reasons why. And I think I slide him into my lineup for $7,400, and I look for him to pad his 20-plus goal season stats. And in net, the easy pick for me is Tristan Jarry for $8,100. I said he's playing very well of late, but leads me to a question for you. I want clarification because you went through your lineup a little quicker than I was able to write them down. How many Penguins have you got in your lineup tonight?
So DraftKings allows you to use four players plus the goaltender.
I see.
So
you've
got the goalie and then a four pack of Crosby, Guentzel, Carter, and McCann.
All right. So that accounts because on DraftKings, you have a maximum of four players, as you know, and I wanted to remind our listeners, just wanted to make that point, AJ. And with that, we look forward to the game action tonight. And as the season winds down, the playoff races are heating up, and that's always a fun time of year, partner. I know you and I will be glued to our sets almost every night this week with action that will impact on those division races. Any final thoughts for you?
Well, I decided to look it up for you, Paul, just so that, you know, we could take a look. Alex Galchenyuk over at our friends BetMGM will get you plus 200 as an anytime goal scorer tonight. So you can get some pretty good value there If you want to, you know, if you're in a state that allows betting, or I don't know the status up in Canada there, but for our listeners, if in the U.S., if you're in a state that allows betting, you can get Alex Galchenyuk +200 tonight as Paul calls a goal for the winger.
All right. Well, single game prop bets are allowed now in Canada. A recent bill was passed. So some gambling updates for our listeners as well to keep you up to date on the legalities in your provinces or states. They're ever changing, but it's looking more and more like the landscape is changing in toward a favorable situation for people who like to throw down the odd dollar or two. And that's where we'll wrap it up this week. Our look around the league, more routine than our trade deadline special last week. I hope you enjoyed it. Thanks for listening to Puckcast with Statsman and AJ, folks. RotoWire's signature fantasy hockey podcast. Please remember to send your comments or questions on Twitter. Follow me, Paul Bruno, at Statsman22. And you can follow AJ at AJSchultz24. As always, we invite you to listen into Puckcast to get our tips to stay out of the competition in your fantasy hockey planning and research. So long, everybody.